head into the theater and the usher nods me in. They know me here. I descend down the staircase behind the movie screen that only select people know about. The door at the bottom opens and I walk in. The sound of movie spoilers fill the air. The barkeep has my drink ready and motions me to the back. The rest of the crew are here already. This is my type of place, and these are my type of people. Join me as we discuss the inner secrets of cinema. Have a seat in the spoiler room.
Yes, my friends, we are continuing our Jeff Goldblum month. You can thank the lovely Dawn for this. Well, not really her fault. She just put the idea in my head and I ran with it because that's what I end up doing. So today, in our third Jeff Goldblum film, we are taking a look at 1985's Transylvania 65,000. And with me tonight is a great crew to talk about this interesting comedy. First off, the BFD himself is back in the spoiler room. Give it up for Mr. Glenn Bittner. Hello, Glenn. How are you, sir?
We're all fine here.
Oh, nice. You got your stadium crowd with you tonight, I see.
Yeah, so. Yeah. In the back, yeah.
Yeah, a bunch of...
I get pretty excited when I take my pants off.
Well, we don't have the cameras on, so you could take whatever you want off. So just knock yourself out. Not literally, though.
No, I'm wearing shorts under it. They're just a nifty slogan. I was printed on them that people enjoy.
Oh, nice. Awesome. And also in the spoiler room tonight, she is back with us once again. Let's say hello to Miss Angelique. Hello, Angelique. How are
you? Hello. I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. I'm glad you could join us for a Jeff Goldblum film. I know I had to twist your arm, right?
Oh, for this one, no way.
Well, it's just, you know, I think this needs a bit of a woman's touch. So why don't you, if you don't mind, give us the synopsis of Transylvania 65,000.
Okay, so Transylvania 65,000 is following a pair of tabloid reporters on a story chasing Frankenstein's monster, or Frankenstein, as he's commonly known. And they travel to Transylvania, and they start investigating, and they get kind of torn between, are these monsters for real or no? And they get taken in by the cops. And all kinds of mayhem ensues, and it turns out the monsters aren't who you think they are.
No, they are not. And yes, this is written and directed by Rudy DeLuca. And if you don't know that name, you should. If you're a Mel Brooks fan, he's written a few of the Mel Brooks movies. And so here he's in the director's chair as well as the writer's chair. He does a little acting and shit. I think he produced and directed it. He pretty much does it all. With this interesting film with Mr. Jeff Goldblum and Ed Begley Jr. playing our two reporters, and along the way, a cast of characters made up of a great cast here. Carol Kane, Jeffrey Jones, John Byner, Gina Davis, Michael Richards is in this, and let's not forget Norman Fell as well. Just so many people in this. And Glenn... what did you think of Transylvania 65,000?
I remember seeing it when I was younger.
Uh-huh.
Probably on HBO or something like that.
Yeah, cable fodder, definitely.
It was definitely cable fodder. Well, I won't go as far as give it the glowing review that Leonard Maltin gave it.
Yeah, he...
His review simply was, Transylvania 65,000 stunk. I'm Leonard Maltin, Entertainment Tonight.
Yeah.
I won't go that far.
Okay.
I didn't not enjoy it when I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
I didn't think it was amazing. Going back and rewatching this, I'm like, this is a gigantic waste of talent. A lot of it. I think some of the scenes with Carol Kane and John Byner are actually somewhat, actually kind of enjoyable and funny. finding out that part of that is probably because they improv most of their stuff together.
Yes, they did.
So that was not the great talents of Rudy DeLuca, who wrote their lines and their scenes, other than make sandwiches or whatever it was in the kitchen.
Yeah,
so,
make sandwiches and cut fruit. That's all they.
Yeah. So
that's all the direction they had for that scene.
Yeah, it's. Going back and watching it now, it's just, you know, the number of people they had in here who are very talented, I think, doing comedy, and just so much of it falls flat. I think it's that. I mean, you know, and I mean, Rudy DeLuca, you know, with, you know, you mentioned Mel Brooks.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same kind of thing where sometimes the comedy hits, but when it misses, oh my gosh, the collateral damage. So,
I have a feeling Angelique may have a slightly different view, which will make this an interesting discussion tonight. Angelique, what do you think of Transylvania 65,000?
Well, this one's just like a nostalgia machine for me.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it as a kid. Like, I used to watch this one, Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, mm-hmm. and Disorderlies on VHS during the summertime.
Wow, like, that's a triple feature.
I wore those tapes out. And even to this day, like, I'll just find myself going, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, you know, just in my head, or like while I'm typing or something like that. So this movie's kind of like a big part of me. You know, I agree with Glenn on some of it, especially, you know, watching it now, especially, you know, the reporter characters, not that great. There were so many good chances for this to be like just a killer, to be as memorable as Young Frankenstein, but it doesn't hit. Do I still love it? Absolutely. Will I watch it if it's on? Heck yeah. I bought the thing on Prime, so I've got it at my fingertips whenever I want it. So, but could it have been a lot better? Yeah, it could have.
Yeah, with this cast. Now, I will say I enjoyed it. I used to watch this. I forgot how much I watched this until we started watching it. I actually just watched it tonight with my wife's copy, because she has it, because she's a Jeff Goldblum fan, so of course. You know, and watching it at first, I'm like, wow, did I see it? And then I'm like, oh, it all started, like you were saying, Angelique, a lot of nostalgia coming back. I watched it many times. Though I didn't watch it for the whole cast, I only watched it for a specific person in the cast, and that was because 10-year-old me, and well, even me now, had a bit of a crush on Gina Davis. So, you know,
this was top-notch Gina Davis,
and I mean, this was in Gina Davis in fine form. yeah, so for me, you know, when I was younger, I didn't pay too much attention to the rest of the cast. I knew who Jeff Goldblum was, but the rest of the and Ed Begley Jr., I recognized some of the faces, but I thought it was humorous, you know, and entertaining. And now older, I laughed quite a bit, namely for the Carol Kane scenes. I love Carol Kane, and you know, it's a little bittersweet when you watch films like this, you know, but she, such a talent. And it doesn't surprise me that those scenes were improv'd, because the way she plays it and the way John Byner plays it, you're just like, no, this wasn't written. There's no way the way they're played off each other, half this stuff was written. So I love their characters. And yeah, it kind of feels like it wants to be another Young Frankenstein. Doesn't quite get there. Some of the jokes and moments hit well. But as Glenn said, there is a lot of collateral damage, especially when the humor doesn't hit. You know, and watch this, because, yeah, Ed Begley Jr. and Jeff Goldblum play are two reporters. And Ed Begley Jr., man, that hair, Angelique. What'd you think, though, of these two the dynamic between these two, you know, Jeff Goldblum and Ed Begley Jr., who was recommended by Jeff Goldblum for the film.
Oh, wow. Well, Jeff Goldblum's character is really a jerk.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's like, I'm a serious journalist. I'm like, why did you take a job at the Midnight Star then?
Yes, exactly.
You know, I'm like, you're writing about, you know, aliens and that boy. You can't expect to be, you know, Tom Brokaw or, you know, something like that. I'm like, no. And Ed Begley's character, Gil, you know, the son of the, I guess the head.
The owner, honcho, yeah. The editor, yeah, the chief, editor-in-chief.
The tabloid. Yeah. He's just kind of like a kid, really, to me. Like, mm-hmm. He acted more like a child, you know, kind of dopey and innocent and with a fabulous head of blonde hair.
That didn't move. I don't know how much, but that was his like signature. It's like whenever you saw, I don't ever remember Ed Begley Jr. not having hair like that. Maybe a little thinner later on when he got older, but still the same damn style.
It's a thing. It's a look.
It is a look. That is for sure. You're right about the Jeff Goldblum character being a dick in this movie. And most of the time, he just looked like he's just standing there with his eyes and trying not to laugh sometimes, but mostly just kind of standing there while the craziness happens next to him and around him. I was watching this going, there's actually not a huge amount of interaction of Jeff with a lot of the cast.
It's like he's just trying to get with
Elizabeth.
Elizabeth,
played by Teresa Genzel. It's an interesting dynamic between these two, and I found it interesting that Jeff Goldblum recommended Ed Begley Jr. for the role of Gil, which then in turn, Ed Begley Jr. recommended, yes, a young Michael Richards to play the character of Fejos. So that's kind of an interesting connection there with those three characters. I forgot Michael Richards was in it, and so when he popped up, I'm like, holy crap. He did do a lot before, you know, Seinfeld and UHF. but Glenn, what'd you think of our two reporters, Jack and Gil?
Jack is a dick. I don't like the character at all. It doesn't seem like Goldblum's heart was really in it either.
Right.
Which, I mean, for what the character was, I mean, they didn't give him really anything to work with.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's a big part of why I think I don't like the character as well, because it's just, he's just kind of like there. It's like, he's not really acting. He's just kind of like reading his lines and trying not to be, it's almost like he's trying not to say, I can't believe I'm doing this. but hey, a paycheck's a paycheck.
That's right.
As far as Gil, I mean, I like Gil a little better.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I think he just does more in the movie other than just be a skeez.
Which Jack is, the editor-in-chief and Gil's dad, who was played wonderfully. It was great to see Norman Fell as Mac. He's like too good to be in this movie. But he sends them to Transylvania, and literally, Jeff Goldblum's Jack is off the bus, and he's already like got Elizabeth in his sights and starts skeeving to the point of, and let's let's set the Wayback Machine 30 years to a different time when you could say, hey, go play with the little girl while I go talk to the mom, to a grown man. That was just, I couldn't believe that. I'm like, wow, that's definitely a different time. Would you say, Glenn, that that was just a little odd? When he tells Gil to go play with the little girl and he's sitting there playing and the mom doesn't seem to have any problem with a stranger spinning her daughter around.
Yeah, and just the fact that Gil is just like, okay, I'll go play with a little girl. Like, this is as if this is like some normal conversation to have. You know, it's like everywhere they go, it's just like, hey, go play with little kids. Yeah. Like, what? I mean, it really sets a tone for what is. I mean, obviously, this is not something new.
No.
So this is something that Jack does all the time, where it's the, hey, you know what I like are women who have kids, but I don't want the kids around. So, Gil, go play with them so I can get it with Mom.
Yeah, I know. It's just like, wow, I don't know if they're supposed to be humor, but this is not landing in today's world. And it kind of really did kind of turn me away from the Jack character. Angelique, what about you? And this scene in where they're off the bus and Jack starts macking on Elizabeth and tells Gil, oh, go play with her daughter.
Well, no, I was just like, wait a minute, what? No, stay away from that child. What are you even doing? That doesn't work. You can't, you know, you can't have a wingman for, you know, to block a child.
Well, then he's spinning her. He's like got her by the arms and they're just spinning and playing. And the mom's like, oh, come on over here, because she wants to get away from Jack. Never mind this guy she's never seen before.
Well, I mean, that's what you did in the 80s.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, you tried to inflict cranial trauma on small people. I mean, we didn't have helmets or anything. It was the Wild West if you were under the age of 15.
Heck, my safety chair back from the late 70s had a metal bar in front of it. So, and that was the
right.
That was the chair you put in the car. That was the car seat, which also doubled as my high chair. You could take it out and hook it up on legs for a high chair, but there was a metal bar in front of me.
Yeah, you got metal bars to chew on, paint chips to eat.
Oh, yeah, and adult.
They let us. No supervision.
Yeah.
They put us out of the house and let us roam wild until the streetlights came on. So, sure, it's the middle of the day. This strange blonde man is going to play airplane with Laura.
Well, I mean, and how the kids are treated, the kid is treated in general throughout this film. Jack continues to not be the best character because he's talking to her on the phone and he's like, they have, you know, like babysitters at the hotel. I'm sure they do, you know, we could do dinner, you know, and I'm like, dude, they don't have babysitters at the hotel, but she must
actually have... that used to be a thing.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes. They had staff members at the hotel who were certified in, like, you know, first aid and CPR.
Yeah.
Who would, you know, the hotel would allow them to watch a child for, you know, a certain number of hours.
Wow. I did not realize that. Maybe because I was the child at myself at the time, but we never had a hotel babysitter. But maybe that's just a testament to my parents who left me alone a lot. But no, anyway, I say too much.
I mean, she's not the best mom either. Right off the bat. She lets this child just run through the wilderness of Transylvania.
Well, that was another thing, is it's like later on, you're like, okay, maybe this is a kind of one thing because she just got off the bus. But later on in the film, they're having a picnic. Never mind, he's there to investigate and they might be onto something. But the crack reporter, Jack, is too busy trying to get with Elizabeth and they're having a picnic and the daughter drifts off again. And I mean, she's gone for a few minutes before the mom goes, oh, you know what? I better go look for her in this big, huge woods that she's not familiar with at all. You know, I'm like, wow. But then again, her character, I don't know what to make of her character. Again, I actually found a lot of entertainment in this film and, you know, where it did hit. But some things did stand out to me. And one of the things with her character, because I was trying to figure out, is she a strong character or is she just odd, or does DeLuca just not know how to write a female character outside of a nymphomaniac in the form of Odette, played by Gina Davis? Angelique, what'd you think of the Elizabeth character? Not just because she was kind of a bad mom, but the character in general, did you get a weird feeling like he wasn't quite sure what to make her?
Yeah, she was really hard to figure out because she's kind of playing this double-sided, like, you know, warrior mom versus this kind of, oh, well, did see this and that. And, you know, I had to get away from my ex-husband. And Gil's like, well, you know, you're running away from your husband. Oh, no, I'm not running away. I just had to beat him over the head with a wine bottle to get away. You know?
Yeah.
Laura has, not Laura, but Elizabeth has been through some stuff. Maybe she was in the big dollhouse for a couple of months or something. I don't know.
I don't know either, but I really wish they would have had her lower her voice just like you did, because that would have just added so much humor to it, to where, oh, I didn't run away. I hit him in the head with a wine bottle.
Well, I mean, at the end, she did that. Like, when she cracked that wine bottle, I was like, you want to taste glass? Like, whoa, yeah, right. Where did that come from?
Yeah, I wasn't quite sure what they were trying to do with that character. It's like, it kind of make a decision with her because you don't get a huge amount of screen time. So it's not like we get a lot of time to develop or flesh out her character at all. And it was just kind of odd how they handled her. Glenn, what'd you think of Elizabeth? Just psycho crazy?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
But did you get the feeling as well, or how did you feel about her character? Was it kind of hard to gauge what they wanted her to be?
I don't know. I don't know if they knew who they wanted anyone to be, really.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think she, you know, is a good fit for the, you know, the scuzz magnet that Jack is. So
they are two peas in a pod, in other words.
Yeah.
So we have these folks who are the quote unquote normal folks, and then we get the lovely patrons of Transylvania with Jeffrey Jones as the town mayor. I like Jeffrey Jones quite a bit. I'll watch him in anything. And in here, I think he does well as the Leapskew mayor. I know I mispronounced the name and all, but he gets some really fun scenes in here, I think. You know, it doing the obviously not well accent, but I think that was kind of part of the shtick. But Glenn, how about Jeffrey Jones' performance in this, and as the mayor and the owner of the hotel castle where they stay?
Again, I think it's a sign of underused ability in an actor.
Mm-hmm.
Just so much of it is just it's such a recurring theme in this film is that, mm-hmm, you know, you have so much talent that is just so underutilized.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could have done so much more, but they you know, said, you know, the bottom of the barrel that you know, was scraped. Can we flip that over and scrape the bottom of the bottom?
Wow.
I think a big part of it is I don't think a lot of the actors were that invested in the movie.
Right.
And I think it shows in their performances, mm-hmm, where they just didn't, it doesn't seem like really any of them really care.
It feels like they're, a lot of them are going through the motions. I mean, even Gina Davis with her character, she almost doesn't seem to feel that comfortable with the character she's playing. Though, I mean, she still pulls off the Odette character, but she doesn't exactly see, you know, it's like she's performing and she made me laugh a couple of times, I fully admit, but at the same time, she's kind of got that look like, I went to acting school for this. Angelique, what did you think about Jeffrey Jones in this? Do you think he was kind of a wasted talent as well?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, granted, you know, what we know about him now, you know, he's not that popular of a guy.
Yeah.
But back in the day, you know, that's Ed Rooney.
Mm-hmm.
which was a phenomenal character. And now, you know, here he is here, and he's a really funny guy, but it's kind of like, here you're the mayor and you're happy and you don't know American slang, so you're going to just mess up proverbs and stuff. And he's just like, well, I'm getting $1,500 for this. So okay.
Yeah. The minor characters, you know, the ones that we don't see as much of are the ones that really seem more into it. I mean, Michael Richards seems to be just, I mean, I'm not sure if there was really any script, but some of his humor, I mean, it's supposed to be awkward, but Angelique, how'd you feel with Michael Richards in this? Because I thought he was one of the more higher points of the film as far as comedy.
I love slapstick. I'm definitely a fan of that. So that just hit me right in the heart. You know, my heart grew three sizes hearing him make that little weird scream that he does. You know, it just makes me laugh. And you can, it's like almost like he's Stanley Spadowski's grandpa.
Yeah. Yeah. An ancestor of Spadowski, to be sure.
Yeah.
But I
when he's on,
go ahead.
When he's on that mechanical horse, what are you doing? I'm meditating.
He just pops up out of nowhere. Well, then you get that same thing, because earlier he used the shtick of a fake leg that he shoved in the door to scare Ed Begley Jr.'s character, Gil. But later on, yeah, after he's on that fake horse, just in this random room that Gil opens, he sticks his leg out again. Gil thinks it's fake, pulls it, and he just pulls him right onto the floor. And I fully admit it, I laughed. I laughed on a number of his parts. Again, I'm wondering just how much of that was Richards versus an actual script of any kind for this film. Glenn, what'd you think of Mr. Young Michael Richards in the film?
Boy, you know, this is a harder podcast than I thought it was, because I want to say something good about this film. The shtick gets really old really quick.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the one time I actually did laugh was the meditating part.
Yeah,
I did laugh at that because it wasn't the same. It was ridiculous, but it wasn't the same. Being the you know, fall down type humor.
Sure. That is,
you know, oh, my leg's stuck in the door. Ah, it's a fake leg. Now it's my real leg. Now it's, you know.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, to be fair, I mean, physical comedy is really what Michael Richards is good at.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess, you know, when I was younger, I don't remember that much about his character in this.
Mm-hmm.
I probably liked it more when I was younger, but I think as I've gotten older, that just the physical comedy is not, it doesn't do it as much for me as it used to, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I guess maybe I don't know if I want to say matured, but just, I guess I've experienced enough comedy in general,
mm-hmm.
you know, that there's better stuff out there, and that physical comedy has its place, but it can get old really quick.
Yeah, no, I follow you there. I enjoyed most of the physical comedy, and it's actually a lot of the comedy in here, either through Michael Richards or you know, between Carol Kane and John Byner's character, Loopy and Radu, who are adorable. You know, it feels almost like he's trying to do an older school comedy, where there's a lot of slapstick, a lot of kind of ridiculous situations, you know, like the old, like Abbott and Costello meets Frankenstein type of film in many respects in this film. I think that's the impression that I got, but just not quite getting there a lot, because some of the scenes really did have that energy of that older slapstick kind of humor that we saw in comedies like that in like the 50s, and early 60s, but here it feels like not all of it lands, for lack of a better term, but some of it does. But yeah, a lot of the physical comedy in here and that just reminded me of old school, like 50s film. Do you think maybe Glenn, maybe he's trying to go for that, considering he is kind of a parody guy? He's written a few for Mel Brooks and that. What do you think of that, that he maybe was trying to go for that older school comedy with a modern spin or something?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe. I think a big part is I think the movie was rushed.
Yeah.
They had a short shooting schedule of 30 days or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
On top of the fact that, from what I heard, that this was, that Dow Chemical paid for this.
Yeah, because they had a clout of money that they couldn't get out of Yugoslavia.
Yeah, so they just, said, okay, we'll pay for this movie. So I don't know. I think he was trying to do something, but it just didn't work.
Right. Yeah, for me it worked a little more, but there was some misses as well. Angelique, what about you? You think he may be shooting, considering, his past, like High Anxiety and Silent Movie and that? You think maybe he was trying to go for that Mel Brooks-ish type of parody of old-school slapstick monster comedy?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think it is that same thing that we run into a lot. There's just too many ingredients in the casserole. So if they had stuck with one type of monster, mm-hmm. I think it, and flesh that out more, or, everybody in the village has something wrong with them, not just these few little characters that we get into, like Odette and the Wolfman and Hunyadi.
Yeah.
If everybody had like a bandage or, a cast or something, like, what's going on in this town? Oh, there's a mad doctor. That would have been cool too. But again, if you're rushed and you're, just getting hit with Dow Chemical money in the middle of Yugoslavia, you work with what you got, I guess.
It sounds like a sequel to Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
You might not be too far off.
Hit with money in Yugoslavia. It's like, I think it's heart to the right place, but yeah, a 30-day shooting schedule for a film like this, it put everything in the kitchen sink. Had they focused on one monster, because folks, as this film plays out, it suddenly turns into Monster Squad in a lot of ways, because we find out that there is a mad doctor, and Lupi and Radu are his minions. But we don't just have a Frankenstein-type creature in the form of Hunyadi. We also got Odette, who thinks she's a vampire. We've got a wolfman. We've got a contortionist. And we've got a mummy. It's like, but they just suddenly appear. It's like, we don't even have any really lead into these. Well, maybe a little bit to the Wolfman because we get the old gypsy. But it just felt like suddenly, at some point in this film, they decided, we need more monsters. quick, get these guys. And they felt almost like a bit of an afterthought. I mean, I think I know why Gina Davis was in the film. No offense, but we are talking the 80s and a Yugoslavian film. So, I don't know. Yeah, the monsters, I think if they would have focused on one, because I tell you, one of the characters that I do love, besides all the side characters like Radu and Lupi and, Hunyadi, but I really dug Joseph Bologna's Dr. Malavacqua. And I loved it because, and this is what triggered my memory in the realizing I watched this film a lot when I was young, was when he got to the lab. Angelique, what'd you think with his character of Dr. Malavacqua how he was outside of the lab versus inside the lab and that kind of shtick that they used? What'd you think of that and his performance with that?
Oh, when I was a kid, it was hilarious. I'm like, look at him. It's like a Jekyll and Hyde. Mm-hmm. Watching it now, I'm like, okay, it's still funny. It's not as, knee slapping hilarious as I thought it was when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm like, but why? Why? When he crosses his threshold, what happens? He keeps offering people espresso, and yes, I'll take. No. Oh, Lord. You know, I'm like, is there like something in the air? I need a little exposition.
You need a little bit, because you do get explanation for all the other monsters of why they are like that at the big conclusion of this, of why the guy looks like Frankenstein monster, the mummy who's not really the mummy, the wolfman who has a skin condition. You know, you folks can understand where they were going with it. But yeah, the doctor is never really quite understood, though I did like his ability to switch between them. I thought he plays this well and sells it a lot better than it probably should have been sold. You know, for paying attention where he is all the time. So I did enjoy his performance, but it is humorous. Just, yeah, it would be nice for just maybe a little explanation. What about you, Glenn? Did you want maybe a little explanation of why Dr. Malavacqua was the way he was?
No, I wasn't expecting any explanations for anything out of this movie. So, no.
Well, I found it amusing quite a bit, and you could see the hints there, though. I mean, it's funny, my wife kind of said a little Mel Brooks wannabe at the end of the film. She loves it, and I find it quite adorable film, actually, and a number of entertaining spots, but it by far is not really a great film. But you can see the hints in here of kind of that Mel Brooks humor. I mean, that humor that we saw in some of the Mel Brooks films, obviously, because he's written them. Oh, Glenn, what would you think if maybe Mel Brooks had directed it with this cast?
I don't know.
Do you think it would?
Because, I mean, he's had good casts in some other movies that were terrible as well. I think maybe he would have done a little better job. He was still firing on most cylinders at this point. This point in this, you know, in the 80s, but I don't know, maybe. But again, I think this was just, it was made not, it's not like they went, you know, they said this was like a well thought out plan of making a movie. It was just the, let's just do this because we got some money we can't use.
Yeah. That's true. What about you, Angelique? You think in the hands of Mel Brooks, even though with the same script written by DeLuca, but in the hands of Mel Brooks and with this cast, you think he would have done better considering where he was at in the 80s? Or do you think maybe it wouldn't have been that much better?
Well, I think the script is a big problem. You know, one of the big problems with the movie. So, I mean, Mel Brooks is brilliant, but I think it would take a major overhaul to make it, you know, it's not a bad movie, but it really needs help.
Well, you can see the potential in here for this to be a really ruckus comedy. Yeah. I mean, you know, we're watching it and I found it amusing. I chuckled a couple of times. Actually, one of my favorite scenes was early on, and it was with another side character where Ed Begley Jr. Gills, he is the innocent of the two. He tries to quietly ask these Transylvanians at the hotel desk. He tries to ask the concierge or whatever about Frankenstein, because the newspaper got this videotape of supposedly Frankenstein terrorizing two tourists. So that's why they were there. And he tries to ask quietly. And so, of course, the concierge is laughing. And then he calls over a barmaid and tells her. And I don't know why, but I just found her little tiny squeak laugh hilarious. The way she played it. I'm like, oh, man, I that was funny. And then some of the more movie went on. I'm like, oh, Jack showed up again. Great. You know, it was one of the more humorous moments. I did enjoy that bit quite a bit. But, yeah, the script is... It almost feels like they just threw anything at a wall as they were almost playing it by ear as they went on. You know, like, what do we got to do today? Well, how much money do we have left in the coffer? This much. Oh, we could afford some hair makeup. Let's throw a Wolfman in here. Yeah, yeah, that's it. So that shtick I liked, though, with the one maid laughing. And then the other one was the gypsy mother who we get in here. Because, of course, you've got a horror comedy playing in Transylvania. So, of course, you're going to get an old gypsy woman. And she does have kind of a comical shtick, which is out of nowhere. And, yeah, Angelique, what'd you think with the gypsy woman?
I sleep now. Bam!
That made me actually laugh out loud. She just smashes her head, doesn't hesitate, doesn't anything. She just falls forward and that table busts.
I think the one that really gets me is the second time they go see her and they know what's going to happen. And she's like, I sleep now. And she slumps forward and Jeff Goldblum catches her.
Jeff Goldblum, yeah.
Pushes her back up, but her head bounces off the wall and slams to the table again. That was good.
That was good. You know, and the old guy just comes in and replaces the table. You know, I thought that was one of the higher highlight points. That did actually make me laugh out loud with this. And, you know, there was that physical comedy again that they worked in here. You know, did you find humor in that scene, at least, Glenn, at all, with the old gypsy woman?
Yes.
You did? Okay,
yes.
Well, that's...
The I sleep
shtick. But that kind of felt like Mel Brooks, like you would see in a Mel Brooks film type of humor, doesn't it? The I sleep shtick would be something that you would maybe, you know, you would see in one of the films that kind of out of nowhere punchline, for lack of a better term. You know... I mean, you see the hints in here of it. It's just, I makes me wonder what this film would have been like either with more time or a better behind the scenes crew, to handle this film, and it is Jeff Goldblum in here, though. I don't think you get his shirt off in this film, folks. I don't think you actually get to see Jeff Goldblum shirtless in this. No, we don't. I do apologize for that.
No, I inspected very closely. You know,
it was funny. We were watching the movie and my wife mentioned something that, you know, how Ed Begley Jr.'s eyes are actually, you know, quite handsome, quite pretty. And she's like, well, Jeff Goldblum's is too. And I'm like, oh, and then I was like, she made something of the point of, so like you're saying, Ed Begley Jr.'s eyes are as good looking, and so is Jeff Goldblum's. Whose is better looking? And she went, yes. And
that's the correct answer.
She liked both their eyes. She liked both their eyes in this. I think, you know, to get back to the Jack character with Jeff Goldblum, I think what he was meant to be was the straight man, the audience straight man, just not written too well. Would you say that, Glenn? Maybe what would you think of the concept that Jack's actually supposed to be the straight man? He just was either not written well or not performed well.
I mean, I could see that. I don't know. I mean, he's... There's straight men and there's just... I'm an asshole. That's kind of... He's kind of more of the... I'm just a selfish asshole.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. Now, I mean... Mm-hmm. I mean, which is the other thing. I think if you're going to have someone who's going to play kind of an egotistical ass, I think Goldblum could do it really, really good. if you watch, I can't remember the movie now. Igby Goes Down. Oh my gosh, his character in there, he's a complete ass, but he's so good at it.
Right.
And this is, again, I think it's just, it's if he was written, it's supposed to be the straight man, it wasn't written well, it wasn't performed well, it just didn't come across that way.
Right. Yeah. Angelique, would you agree with Jeff Goldblum? He's probably supposed to be the straight man in here,
yeah,
but not handled well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like the difference, you know, we compared this before, you know, to Abbott and Costello, you know, mm-hmm. your Bud Abbott. He's a straight man, but he also, you know, this is his friend and his partner, and there's right. a kindness there. Or it's like Mo, you know, mm-hmm. Mo is the straight man of the Three Stooges.
Of the three. That's not saying a whole lot, you but know, yes, he is.
For what it's worth, there's still that kinship. Here, there's none of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jack is just a butt for the whole movie.
Well, and I'll add to you as well. If you look at like Mo and in Abbott and Costello, the straight men generally, they're not dicks to everyone. You know, kind of like yeah. how Jack is just like not nice to anybody.
Right. He you know, thinks the village is crap. He thinks the castle is crap. He hates the locals. He laughs at him, and then he's, you know, has total disdain for Gil. So there's nothing redeemable there.
No, you think maybe these two guys play off each other. There's that friend banter, which I have quite a bit with my very long time friends. You know, Glenn and I have that, especially when we get to the festivals. But you know, I've also got a buddy I've known since middle school, and yeah, we have banter and we can be kind of dicks to each other occasionally, but there is still a kinship there. There's still a chemistry there, and you do not have that with Gil and Jack between these two. Never. And it doesn't like develop. It's not like, oh, they become kumbaya later on. Like, this is kind of the growing thing. There's really no growth arc in this film for much of any of the main characters at the end of it, you know, outside of Jack proving somehow that he suddenly knows all these things about the monsters at the end, which I know he kind of does investigating, but did I miss it, Angelique? Was there a scene somewhere where he did some research on who all those people were? Because
it was a throwaway line by the doctor. He said, come ride with me in the car. I'll tell you about it on the way.
Oh, okay. Because I'm like, how did suddenly Jeff Goldblum's Jack become instilled with the power of all knowledge? because he's rattling off what each condition was. I'm like, where was that? And you're right, that's a throwaway line, but, you know, and that's not set up well then, because that could mean any number of things.
Right, you know, instead of seeing the charming Bavarian dance that padded out the running time a little bit, we could have, you know, seen snippets of that little conversation in the car.
It would have been nice to see snippets. Don't get me wrong, though. I think the Hungarian dancers they got were very talented, and especially probably for the budget that they had on this film. That was that extra Dow Chemical money.
That's how they got the tax breaks.
That's how they got the tax breaks. Yeah, exactly. You know, you get this dance routine to a Hungarianized version of Pennsylvania 65,000, which of course it's a play. That's what the title of played off of, Transylvania 65,000, and they really get a lot of mileage out of this song.
What?
I know, Glenn.
That can't be.
I hope you're yes. sitting, because yes, Glenn, it's. Though I do, and my wife wants it. I want the ringtone for the phone in the hotel.
Yes.
Because the ringtone for the phone in the hotel, which is this play gator
phone. I kind of want the phone.
It's shaped like
I'm or the be phone gluing too. Yeah, plastic dinosaurs to all my phones now.
I loved the phone and that the Transylvania 65,000 theme is play, or the Pennsylvania one is the ringtone. And you've got at one scene, one point, Fejos, Michael Richards' character, he's dancing a bit and lets it ring all the way through until the very end to where there's a break, and then he gives Transylvania 65,000. It's like, they get a lot of mileage out of that song, and I want that ringtone and those phones. Also, things that is amusing in the set production that my wife pointed out was they are parodying a bit of the old classic gothic house, because each room has about 1,500 paintings in it. Did you notice that, Glenn? That every room, the sheer volume of paintings in the room? I mean, these sets were kind of cool, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. I mean, the set work was great.
Mm-hmm. you have that. I mean, I wanted to stay at this castle. Angelique, what'd you think of all the paintings in each room and the multiple busts?
I'm looking for, you know, buttons for the bat cave and secret passages. And what I loved most was that first scene where they're sitting down to have lunch and there's that huge scientific setup with all the juices and the coffee and everything.
Oh, God, yes. They're in beakers.
Yeah, I want that for my kitchen so bad, but I know if I order that much scientific glassware, I'm going to be put on so many lists.
Suddenly she's flagged by, no, all I want to do is make three juicers and a coffee pot.
Well, I mean, I'm already on a lot of lists
beakers
anyway, more than likely, but I just don't need to add anymore.
It's called incognito mode. There you go, Angel.
You know that Siri and Google and Alexa all monitor that crap. There's no such thing as incognito.
Oh, I know. They have a three-way orgy of information, but that's a whole nother movie. But yeah, I dug the sets as well. I loved the fact they have a wardrobe where they're putting in clothes and there's a painting inside. Inside the where they hang the clothes, there's a portrait inside there, you know, and they put some thought into the setting, and yeah, I do wish, and we'll kind of wrap it up here. I do wish this script was better. There's potential here. You could see it for being something more than it was. It is cute. It's an adorable little film that, if you can look past Ass Jack, there's some really great little bits in here, especially, like I said, Carol Kane. Seeing Carol Kane on screen in those scenes, it's like, it was beautiful. I was like, I could watch her do almost anything, and she was just having fun. And I think there's tidbits in here to where, if you're a fan, and it's on Tubi for free, you could watch it if you're curious and a fan of any of these actors. It's by far not one of the better films with Goldblum or these other actors in it, though. We'll wrap it up here tonight with your final thought. Give one scene that just out of the whole film that actually, you know, really, besides besides the gypsy scene, which we all seem to enjoy, name one other scene that actually you thoroughly enjoyed and it actually got a chuckle out of you. And your final thought with Transylvania 65,000. We'll start with you, Angelique.
When the mayor is making fun of Gil, he's like talking about how, you know, when I first moved here, I thought I saw Dracula. And what about the creature from the Black Lagoon? We got Godzilla in the other room and the blob. The room. You know? Oh, that was just a really funny moment. Cause I'm like, no, he meant it. Don't make fun of him.
Well, and makes you wonder if Jeffrey Jones improvised that just rolled off too natural to
right,
almost be written.
And still, I just, the number one though is, when he opens that closet and there's Michael Richards on that mechanical horse, what are you doing? I'm meditating.
I'm meditating.
It still gets me. And I'm like, why the mechanical horse? Wait, I'm not even going to ask why. Never mind.
Why is it in this closet? How is it in there? How did he get there? We don't know. They just opened a door, and there he is on a mechanical horse.
Or even when he first meets Gil, and he's like, "My name is Fehor," and he's like, "Oh, Fehor," and
yeah,
he starts like talking Transylvanian to him, and he's like, "What? I don't understand."
Yeah, he just keeps rolling with it. Yeah, it's those are some great moments in here, and actually, you kind of almost wish there was some of that more just out of left field humor, like the horse closet scene, at least throughout, so you establish a little more of what type of movie this is, but you don't get a lot of those moments either.
I think maybe if the whole thing would have been improv, you know, just like a Christopher Guest movie, have it loose, you know, be like, okay, we know we're going to have this creature, this creature, this creature, this creature, here's where we're going to intersect, but the rest of it is right, what feels good, what feels natural. I think we might have had a better movie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's very well put. Yeah, I almost wish he had even less of a script, especially with this talent, you could get away with it, for sure. Glenn, how about you? Besides a couple of the scenes we already mentioned, is there one other scene that you found actually amusing that made you laugh? And your final kind of summary
The kitchen scene with Cheryl Kane and John Byner is, mm-hmm. I mean, there's not, I don't think there's a lot of great stuff to get mm-hmm. out of this one. So probably that right. one and the one that Angelique mentioned, the I'm meditating.
Yes.
And a big part of that one is because it was different from all the other physical comedy he had been doing. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The setup for it really helped with that joke. And then the grabbing the leg and just pulling him out of the closet. It's just like, Which his character actually seems surprised at for once. That bit really, I think for me too, yeah, that one and the other two we mentioned really are the really ones that I found quite humorous. Where you're supposed to kind of find humor with innocent Gil being practically ravaged by the vampire Odetta, Gina Davis, really kind of falls flat. It's more awkward. though you know they're trying to go for the shtick of humor there, but you're just like, this is kind of awkward. So there's a lot of those moments in here where you're just like, you can see what maybe they're going for, but the joke doesn't quite land. But, you know, as far as the 80s comedies go, it's not the worst one out there by any means, I don't think. It's just one of those where you look at it going, there could have been so much more in this film. But I think it still has kind of a fun spirit to it. And if you go in it with absolutely no expectation and just turn it on and crack yourself a alcoholic seltzer, you probably will enjoy this. And again, it is, I think, free on Tubi right now. So, you know, worth a watch if you're just looking for something, kind of turn your brain off and not think too hard with. You may enjoy Transylvania 65,000. So there you have it, folks. Thank you for listening to us talk about this film. Hope it kind of piqued your curiosity, a way to check it out. Worth a watch, if anything, just to see it and say you saw it. And then, of course, the title. And for me personally, the Gina Davis wardrobe. But that's just the 10-year-old Mark in me talking. Actually, who am I kidding? That's the Mark now talking to me. So, I've said too much. now, this is the part where I give my fantastic crew members who are very patient with this mumbling host a chance to shill their stuff. So, license to shill. Go ahead, Angelique. Please tell the folks where else they can find your stuff at.
Well, you can find me on Facebook. You can find me on All the Gimmicks, Podcast of Georgie Castle, Film Jerks, and a couple of audio dramas coming up from Dream Realms Enterprises. The first one is Robots, that's Robots with a Z of the company, and Monsters, Magic, and Mayhem.
Ooh, monsters like mummies like and werewolves D&D. And Frankenstein? Oh, yeah. D&D. I gotcha. Is it like a live play where you streaming while you play? Or?
It's, I guess, story-based.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah,
sure.
It's right. It's really, It's going to get fun.
That's awesome. Fantastic. So check out those things for sure, folks. And Glenn, anything that you'd like to
add? Not especially. I mean, you can follow me on Twitter, Games in the Bunker. I'm on Facebook. I'm not doing a whole lot of stuff right now because I'm starting to gear up for holiday season with my lovely the stores that I manage. So that's what's really sucking up a lot of my time starting in about another 4 weeks, although I'm already looking at hiring people. So, hey, if you live in Milwaukee and you want to work a seasonal job, hit me up. So there we go. Come work for me, and I will destroy you. I mean, it'll be the best experience of your life. Yeah, that's it.
But you get to work at a game store, which is awesome. And he is modest. He does have some other thing that I will plug for him. He's got a movie or two, actually two, playing at the Northeast Wisconsin Horror Film Festival happening the second weekend in October in the beautiful Time Community Theater in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, folks. You've got to come and see some great indie horror, and you may see some familiar faces as well there at the Horror Fest. And Glenn has two of his movies playing there, so get to see it on the big screen, and you may even get to see the BFD himself. So there you have it, folks. Thank you so much to Angelique and to Glenn for their time. Thank you all for listening. And now I think we'll just say a good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night. The children of the
We're
night.
Meditating.
We're meditating. That's it. We're meditating. I like that. Hey, all my friends out there looking for more spoiler room goodness, then why don't you check out our brand new Patreon page, patreon.com/specialmarkproductions, where you can get access to exclusive spoiler room episodes and a whole lot more. You can also find us on Facebook groups at SMPRD and on to Twitter at Special Mark Pro. Let your voice be heard and let us know what you would like to see in the spoiler room, as well as just how we're doing in general. We appreciate your support, and remember, in the spoiler room, the conversation is fresh, but we do spoil the movies.